The K Jazz Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
The Joy of Jazz Festival is weeks away, and the K-Jazz Show has been mapping the road to the Johannesburg's favorite festival. And for the past few months, you and I have been chatting to some of the festival's headliners. These names have included international stars and our very own homegrown contemporaries, of course, getting us excited and ready to witness the 25th edition of this festival in motion. And this week on the show, you know, we're joined by trumpeter and composer Christopher Stephen Botti, of course, who established a reputation as a versatile musician in both jazz and pop music, and for his ability, you know, to fuse both styles together. Started playing the trumpet at 9 and then committed to the instrument. That was at the age of 12. And that was when, in fact, he heard Miles Davis play My Funny Valentine. And fast forward, Chris has collaborated with iconic musicians such as Aretha Franklin, Paul Simon, Natalie Cole, including Sting and Jill Scott, recording some of our favorite all-time songs. And for Page 3 this Sunday, Kofifi FM, please help me welcome Chris Botti. Good afternoon. Welcome to the K-Jazz Show.
Good afternoon to you. How's everything?
Everything is going fantastic, Chris. How are you doing?
Great. I'm great.
Thank you for joining us. You know, let's begin with your musical journey, you know, with the trumpet. And how has that been like? And what has kept you inspired, maybe, to develop your own sound?
Well, those are two very intertwined questions, I think, for every musician. And yet, at some point, there's a split between them. And let me tell you what I mean. Mm. I think when someone picks up an instrument and they're a kid, that inspiration of like, look, I can do something, you know, I can get around on the instrument, I can be proud of myself. There's a sense of discipline that something like the trumpet takes that is applicable to different things in your life as well, that make life so much more... something to be proud of, like the little things you can get from playing chess or playing the trumpet or learning how to race car drive or whatever is so good for so many other things. And then if you get to a point on an instrument where you feel like you have a way to communicate a personality, that's a whole different thing. That doesn't happen until much, much later. You got to go through band camp and you got to go to college and you got to do all this other stuff and you got to mature as a human being. Then if you figure out, okay, well, I think I may have a shot at being a band leader, or you could say, I want to play in an orchestra, or I would like to play in a Broadway show, or I'd like to be a studio musician. All those things are incredibly valid, and I've done all of them. And along the line, and it wasn't until later perhaps for me, that I found that maybe I had what it takes to be a band leader and to stand in front of a band and shepherd this sort of navigation for my band, which in a million years I never thought would be the success that it's come out to be. And so I think that when you pick up an instrument and you play, you get that initial sugar rush of like learning how to play. And then there's many, many hours of diligence and preparation. And then if you're able to do that, and you think, I got a shot at being a band leader or recording artist, welcome to day number one. Because then there's a whole myriad of stuff that you got to deal with, record companies and fans and all that stuff. That's a whole nother thing. And so I've had a great, great journey and feel so very fortunate.
Oh, well, we've watched
that was a long wind. That was a long-winded answer. I'm very sorry.
For a long-winded question, I would say, you know, you've collaborated with a wide range of artists across different genres, maybe. Let's talk about, you know, how you choose your collaborators and what do you look for, you know, in a musical partnership?
So using my Live in Boston CD as an example, I was personally friends. Like, I allow myself to bump into other musicians, musically speaking, out of friendship. I'll go over to David Foster's house for lunch and Andrea Bocelli will be there. And Andrea would say, boy, I love to sing on your record. And we wrote a song called Italian. He sang on it. And then Andrea and I have done many things together. And the album in Boston, which had Josh Groban and Steven Tyler and Sting and Yo-Yo Ma and John Mayer and so many other people. And we were friends first. And that's why now, as I get older, people go like, who are you going to collaborate with from the young crowd? And as much respect as I respect so much, like Ariana Grande or there's so many different, The Weeknd, blah, blah, blah. But what I don't want to have happen is that Chris Botti collaborated with someone and it felt put together by a record company, right? By a bunch of executives going, I think this person should do a duet with this person. Never happened to that way with me with any of my stuff. I was friends with Sting socially, and then I joined his band, and then boom, he made my career. All these different things happen out of being, having an introduction to someone on a non-threatening sort of musical level, and it enables you to get on stage and be relaxed. And, whether it's Streisand or any of these people that I've gone out and gigged with and duetted with hard, we had that kind of, like little connection beforehand.
Yeah. I want to talk about your musical influences, Chris. Of course, next to Miles Davis, who are they? And how have they maybe shaped, your style of playing?
Think if you're a trumpet player, most people are influenced by, the basic food groups of trumpet. And that would be Clifford Brown, Freddie Hubbard, Wynton Marsalis, of course, from this generation, and Miles, of course. Because of the way I play structurally, I kind of never went into the dizzy thing. My stuff, even though I have register on my trumpet, my stuff was never as kind of like lead trumpety sounding, that Dizzy has this just glamour that is just unparalleled. And so does Maynard as well. But I kind of went more for the Chet Baker kind of, ability to connect some with someone here. And then the other ones, Lee Morgan, I mean, all the basic great jazz musicians I geeked out on and still do to this day, have great admiration for Wynton, spectacular Nicholas Payton of this generation, Jeremy Pelt. There's so many fantastic, talented trumpet players. My goodness gracious, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And their one-of-a-kind kind of interpretation of jazz brings a different color, a hue, to the, I will call it the palette, that you all paint as trumpeters. Kofifi FM, we're spending time with trumpeter Chris Botti this Sunday, reflecting on his career in music and exploring some of his influences.
I would just expand upon what you just said, is that that's one of the great things about the trumpet, is that if you put a piano down, you have 100 people play a middle C on a piano.
Yeah.
You might have a hard time noticing if that person was, an icon like Chick Corea or your neighbor. Like, when they hit the middle C. When you pick up a trumpet and play, it is almost as identifiable in the thumbprint as speaking to someone. Because the airstream is so connected to something that's much more personal than the actual striking of a note and let the piano do the work. You're giving your breath and your personality, and you can tell pretty quickly, like who's got it, going on.
Accustomed to her face, she almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune she whistles night and noon, her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in. I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again, and yet I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face. Breathing out and breathing in, I'm very grateful she's a woman and so easy to forget. Rather like a habit one can always break, and yet I've grown accustomed to the trace. There's something in the air, accustomed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, that's what makes you guys different. And that's what makes us follow every single one
We're
of you.
We're all different.
We get a different sense from every single one of you. Yes. You know, and of course, you are one of the international acts that will be joining us this year at the Joy of Jazz Festival that takes place on the 27th and the 28th September 2024 at the Sandton Convention Center. And of course, Kofifi FM, you are invited. Now, Chris, you know, your work spans jazz, pop, and classical music. Now, how do you navigate, you know, between these genres? And what do you think they each bring, you know, as an element to your music?
As I've left college and gone on to do other things professionally, you know, I kind of wanted to leave the academia world behind when I left college. A lot of college musicians, leave college and they still kind of feel the collegiate aura about them when they make music.
Yeah.
I moved to New York, and one of my very first really big gigs was, even though the band was filled with jazz legends, Michael Brecker, Steve Gadd, etc. But I was in Paul Simon's band for 8 years. We came to Joburg in 1991, and it was a life like unbelievable experience. But I just have so much respect for people that do popular music in a very, very intelligent and artistic level. Someone like Sting or Paul Simon or Joni Mitchell, you know, these people aren't just turning the music over to some producer to kind of kick it and they come in and lay down the vocal. I mean, it's a real kind of thoughtful thing. And it's one of the reasons why I think so many jazz musicians, Miles, Jaco Pastorius, blah, 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 have tipped their cap to somebody like Joni. And I was in Joni's band for a tour, and I learned a ton and have so much respect for that. But you can't get up on stage when Joni's singing or when Barbara Streisand's singing and interact with them as the same way you do when you're playing 30 choruses of Donna Lee. You know what I mean? It's a completely kind of different mindset. There has to be a dialogue back and forth, space and acknowledgement that you're very appreciative and in admiration of their talent. And I think a lot of times jazz musicians think that jazz is the top of the food chain musically, rather than being an interaction with people that want to explore that. Thank you.
And of course, maybe this is probably one of the most unfair questions that you often get, you know, when you have conversations such as this one. You know, do you have a favorite piece of music that you've written or performed?
No. When you're talking to a singer, like Paul Simon, for example, he might say to you, like, oh, I really enjoy singing The Boxer or whatever, you know, in that myriad of iconic hits. But with the trumpet and with jazz, we could do 10 shows in a row, 10 shows in 10 nights, or 20 shows in 10 nights. And it's the way that the trumpet is kicking back on me or interacting with me that one night, My Funny Valentine could be epically wonderful. Like there's a flow, I've got some content, you know, I'm feeling good. And the trumpet is not giving me any issues. Yeah. And then the next night, you know, that same song is just all of a sudden feels a little, not quite as good because I'm not as fluid through the horn. That in itself adds years and years onto your touring life because you're not just getting to the same thing and standing in front of the audience and delivering something that you're just going through the motions. Because in jazz, you really can't go through the motions because it's always altering and shifting. So you just can't stand and sing, you know, all we need is love, not to disparage the Beatles at all. But you know what I'm saying, right? If you got a band, you all got to sing the harmonies in the same place and the same time. And in jazz, you can go off if you want, or you can do whatever you want to do. And that kind of freedom makes it for, you know, being able to play all these shows night after night after night after night and find some sort of new flavor in it.
And I suppose that's what keeps it fresh and keeps the band on its toes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the band, you know, you're one of the artists performing at the Joy of Jazz Festival, and this is not your first time in Johannesburg. What are you looking forward to experiencing this time, you know, that you didn't the last?
Well, this will be our first, I think this is my sixth trip to Joburg. I want to say it. Well, I know for sure it's my first time there with an orchestra. We've had we played with all the major symphony orchestras for the most part. And this will be our first time in Joburg with their orchestra. And I think it's going to be great. We had three or four brand new arrangements done just to debut in Johannesburg with the orchestra of stuff that I had for my new record, Volume 1, but we made it orchestral, you know? And so I'm really excited to hear what the new charts sound like and of course to return to that same place, to that same country and that great city that I was there in 91 with Paul Simon. And boy, it's going to be nostalgic for me.
Yeah, we look forward to it. And of course, speaking of the project, the current project, Volume 1, you went quite jazzy on that one, as opposed to, you know, the what we used to from, you know, the signature Chris Botti. Tell us about this complete, I think, detour. Can we call it a detour?
Well, it's a detour, but yet, you know, it's still a lifestyle record. You know, even though there's jazz tunes on there and even though it's stripped back, it has a fair amount of restraint on it. You know, I mean, the opening track, Danny Boy, being an example, you know, it's like dramatic introduction from David Foster. And then you know, everything's sort of meant to, I love jazz records or I love records that, you know, like that you can put on and like Pat Metheny's Missouri Sky being an example and Keith Jarrett, The Melody Night With You. Of course, Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, where you put them on and you can appreciate the artistry and the tone of like John Coltrane, how much restraint he played with on that record. And then you can also put the record on in your house and have friends over and not be tormented by the information that's coming off the speaker. You know, like always drawn to it. It has this ability for you to breathe and enjoy and for the music to just have this float over you. And that's what we tried to do with Volume 1, was make a lifestyle record rather than trying to capture what I was doing on a live show or 2 o'clock in the morning in a jam session. That's never been my thing on record.
Well, we love the project anyway. And of course, we've been sharing some of this music throughout this conversation. I'm hanging out with Chris Bartier. He's one of the artists that are going to be on stage at the Joy of Jazz Festival this year. So if you don't have yourself a ticket yet, head online, of course, book yourself a seat. He's going to be performing with an orchestra, you know, and they've put together four, he says, you know, different arrangements that they'll be debuting.
To go along with all the other arrangements that we have. But these are four exclusive brand new ones just for Joburg. And so, yeah. But the whole set is going to be orchestral. We have all.
Oh, absolutely. And you heard it here first on The Cage Jazz Show, of course. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. And we can't wait to hang out. We can't wait to have, you know, the Chris Bartier experience live in orchestra mode.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, on the Joy of Jazz stage.
All right. You take care. Thank you so much.
He is, bye-bye, of course, trumpeter, composer Chris Bartier for our weekly Page 3 feature on The Cage Jazz Show.